Beste luisteraars, welkom bij een nieuwe podcast van Telecom Paper, de TP Talks. Deze keer hebben we weer een gast, Jonas Suikerbuik, de CEO of Billigram. He's Swedish, I think, so I will transfer or start talking in English. Jonas, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Yeah,
nice to be here.
Yeah, and you're not in Zeist in the Netherlands. You're somewhere in Sweden, I think, in probably Stockholm.
Yes, I'm actually in an unusually warm Stockholm.
Oh, you got the heat wave we had last week. So
we have it, but I think it's a bit milder here.
Okay.
So it's actually a lot better than a normal Swedish summer.
Well, enjoy it, whatever. Jonas, we are going to talk about the company you manage as a CEO, Billigram. And from what I know, it's a Swedish fintech which is trying to reshape things in the recurring payments industry. So before we start zooming in on that interesting aspect of the business, can you tell a bit more about who Jonas is, why his name sounds like a Dutch guy, Suikerbuik, and then we zoom in, of course, with Billigram, and perhaps you can share something about Billigram, how it started all.
Absolutely. So Jonas Suikerbuik, I'm CEO, founder of Billigram. I've been working with tech for most of my career. Founded a couple of companies before this one as well. Why my last name sounds Dutch is because it is Dutch. I'm actually half Dutch. My father is Dutch, and I actually used to live in the Netherlands until I was about 7 when we moved to Sweden, and yeah, stayed here since then.
Okay.
But love to visit, feel quite at home when I do.
Yeah.
So cherishing my Dutch roots, even though my language skills are rather poor nowadays.
we tried it. We didn't try Jonas, but we just stick to English. Is it okay?
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
Better for everyone.
Yeah. Okay. And Billigram, you are you started when, how, and what's your why?
Yeah, no. So we started in 2011, so quite some time ago now. Even though the company has changed in quite significant ways since then and grown significantly as well. But it kind of started with, a quite simple idea that the bill or the invoice is a very underutilized piece of, and I would say key piece of your customer journey or customer experience. A lot of companies treat it like a cost center, like it's something that needs to be handled as cheaply as possible. But I would say that the invoice and payment are key touch points in your customer journey. And they are a bit of a missed opportunity if you're not working actively with them to create a better customer experience and build loyalty and so on. So we started out with invoice to cash automation in Sweden, but have since then kind of created this European platform where we work in the Nordics, the Dutch region, and lately quite a lot in the Benelux region as well. Since 2023, we're licensed PSP, and I would say that while we have expanded into Europe, the service has become more and more centered around recurring payments.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually built our own kind of proprietary account-to-account payment rails using direct debit and local banks, and are expanding into other payment methods as well.
Yeah. Okay. To bit for the listeners and perhaps also a bit for me, Jonas, we all of course know the Wero and the SEPA and all that those standards, and of course the Adyens and the Stripes. You're none of those, are you? You are
a platform? No. Yes. So we are a payment, nowadays we're a payment lifecycle management platform, I would call us. So payment processing is at the very core of what we do, but I would say that a lot of the value is created in automating kind of the surrounding workflows. So upstream of payment processing, that's like bill presentment, checkout, etc., everywhere where you kind of onboard or nudge your client or customer into payment flow. And then after the payment is processed, it's recovery in different ways. So dunning, chargeback handling, retries, etc. All of that nasty work outside of the happy case of payments, which usually takes a lot of time and energy from companies.
Yeah.
And we managed to do it in a way that removes quite a lot of friction from the kind of payment or invoicing experience, and that in turn leads to happier customers and more loyal customers. Yeah. I would say.
And who do you think are your main competitors in the telecoms industry? Which
so usually we are replacing several different partners. I would say that quite a lot of companies are still on a bit of a legacy tech stack when it comes to invoicing or invoice to cash or recurring payments. So they might be using internal tools for invoice creation. Then they have other partners for distribution. They will have a PSP or their own bank contacts for handling payments. And then Dunning collections is done by a third partner, and then you all reconcile it in whatever BSS or ERP system you're on, and usually that involves quite a lot of headcount in the finance department as well. Mm-hmm. And I would say that in that sense we replace kind of several different partners. Usually you free up quite a lot of headcount as well that can be used for other things that are more value, create more value. So it's a service that has very few kind of direct competitors, very few that do everything that we do. But then of course, in every piece of what we do or every module of what we provide, we have several different competitors.
Yeah. Okay. And I think I understood that in the Nordics, Telenor is one of your telecoms customers, but you also work in different other areas. Can you tell a bit more about those areas where
So we are very active in all verticals where you have high volume recurring consumer payments, but also actually more and more B2B payments as well. Telco is one of our core verticals. In the Nordics, we have both Telenor and Three mm-hmm. as customers.
Yeah.
And they are actually some of the first companies that jumped on the kind of the bandwagon, if you say so, in some of our best customer cases.
Yeah.
So for example, for Vimla, which is a Telenor owned challenger brand, we managed to digitalize their entire invoicing flow. I think that almost all of their payments are automated nowadays, and that means that their customers have a very nice experience around the payment, and in turn, that shows in both their kind of churn numbers, but also customer support errands as a whole has actually gone down a rather remarkable, I would say, 40%-ish.
40,
because yeah. A lot of customer support, I think that's in general, in the Nordics, absolutely, but I think I've heard the same from most telcos.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of customer support errands are related to invoicing, payments, dunning. There's a lot that can go wrong.
Yeah.
There's a lot that consumers don't understand. That usually leads to quite a lot of customer support errands, which yeah. I think a lot of them, you can just solve by having a transparent and customer-friendly process.
Yeah. How is Jonas that you are able to reduce the errors or the faults in invoicing by 40%? What makes it different then? Yeah. What do you do differently then?
So I think that the main difference is the customer friendliness of the solution. So, for example, using open banking to onboard into direct debit, which is not a big, in the Netherlands you have iDEAL, which is a pretty good way of onboarding into that. But in the Nordics, that has been a real game changer. It used to be handled on paper before that. I would say that having clear and transparent invoices, making sure that distribution is successful, so that actually people get the information that they need to understand why they're paying what they're paying. And then, of course, in the dunning flow, making sure that they know if an invoice is paid or not, and kind of nudging them to do the right thing at the right time so that they don't end up in hard collections, but keeping the process amicable as far as possible and just making sure that stuff is paid on time. That's actually maybe it doesn't sound like a lot, but it's I think that that's stuff that matters, just handling the basics very well has made quite a big difference that almost all of our clients, even though 40%, that's like the best number we we have, to be honest.
Yeah.
But it usually does have quite a significant impact either way.
Yeah. So you have an easy sell with all your new telecom customers, for example.
I think that the value prop is usually quite clear for them. But then, of course, as I told you, our service is quite broad. And it's of course, it's buying a SaaS platform, it's buying payment processing, but it's also a digital transformation of your accounts receivables process, which is not that, it's not a super easy step to take for everyone.
No.
It's a big bet. You're changing out a lot of old existing supplier relations, and you're transforming kind of how your finance team works with invoicing and payments.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty big deal. So it usually takes a little bit of time to get people to actually take the leap.
Yeah, I know. Especially
understandable.
It's the lifeline of any company, of course, right? The cash in, to put it that way. Yeah.
It's the cash, and it's all of their customer relations as well. So it's a pretty big responsibility that we take on.
Yeah. Is it possible to say, well, we start with all the new customers and we keep the old ones on the old system?
Yes, we've started to do that more and more lately. And actually, it has become easier when kind of refocusing the service more around the payment, because of course, if you have a couple of million customers like on an old let's say legacy tech stack that is running and working and performing, you might get, it's a way to kind of dip your toes to try and look at well, how does this perform versus what you have, and also maybe optimize your checkout experience.
Yeah.
Using our technology, and it's just quite a good way to try it out, I would say.
Yeah,
and, I tell all of our clients nowadays that, you know, what if they have the possibility, which not everyone has, to actually kind of A/B test different vendors against each other, why not? We're very happy to facilitate that.
You mentioned in your earlier that you said it's one the most often touch point for any customer, right? For the company and the customer, because if as a customer you buy a service and you're satisfied and it's all working, and then there isn't any need for you to look at marketing or sales stuff, you don't call the customer service, so it's a bit difficult for the, in this case, for example, the operator to, well, upsell or do different things. So how does the invoicing then actually allow them to use that touch point more? So how can I see it?
So I think there are like two sides of that coin. And first, the first one I've already kind of touched on. I think that if you're looking at reducing churn without changing your ARPU, at least downwards, it's you know, handling failed payments in different ways and just changing hard reminders into amicable Dunning, that's like a big upside that you have. It's maybe not as exciting to talk about as selling more or, you know, upselling, etc. But it's actually probably one of the single largest impacts you can have on if your business is kind of, you know, high volume, low margin, high churn, then that probably has quite a significant impact on your numbers over time. And then, of course, on the other hand, so what we do with invoicing is actually not really, and this is counterintuitive. We don't really send the invoices. We actually invite your, as a telco, we would invite your customers into a self-service interface, a web-based portal where you can work with your branding, maybe sell something more, communicate with your customers, handle customer support, do quite a lot of things. So it's just a matter of taking something that maybe usually is either a boring paper or a PDF or something like that, and trying to turn that into a kind of a delightful and very dynamic experience.
Okay, so you don't send out the invoice. I think you needed to send out an invoice, are you?
Preferably, we don't send it. We just notify your customer that there is an invoice, and they will actually follow a link and come to a self-service portal.
Yeah.
And then, of course, it's a totally different thing in B2B. There we actually send a lot of invoices. And, of course, that's one of the biggest tailwinds that we have right now as well, is all the e-invoicing mandates that are being rolled out across Europe. And, a lot of companies need to comply with new regulations there. So that's quite, you know, a lot of companies, let's say they're looking for a partner that can absorb some of that compliance related turmoil. And I think that we're quite good fit for that.
Yeah, you mentioned turmoil. There's, of course, a lot of things happening in Europe. Can you, for the listeners, share a bit of what actually is happening and what kind of extra work or opportunities there might be for business-to-business or other companies?
Yeah, no, so it's quite interesting, actually, that for a very long time, it felt like nothing is changing in European payment and invoicing. But now everything is changing at the same time. And I think the most significant changes are, of course, that Europe is trying to build its own kind of sovereign payment rails using account to account. So there's initiatives like Vero, which bought Ideal. So it's becoming quite, you know, I guess the center point of that change is actually in the Netherlands. And I think that also in the Nordics, you see that almost every country has its own kind of mobile payment wallet solution that has been quite, like in Sweden we have Swish, it's very successful. Almost everyone uses it for peer-to-peer and one-time payments, and I think recurring features are going to be rolled out both on Vero and local alternatives. So that's a big thing. And then of course open banking is I would say one of the most significant changes in the last year. It's starting to get a bit older, but actually it's starting to work better and better outside of kind of the Nordics I guess the Benelux region is quite far ahead as well. But for example, in Germany, it's still quite patchy, the coverage. But that is actually a major change. So we use it a lot to kind of use the AESP, so the account lookup to onboard into direct debit. Very efficient. It has the best of two worlds, I would say. It's both a very customer friendly, nice experience. I would almost like say an Apple Pay-like onboarding into a very, very cost-efficient payment rails. That's the old direct debit rails.
By the way, Jonas, you mentioned open banking. Is that a directive from EU, or what is it exactly, open banking?
So there's a payment directive, PSD2, which came a couple of years ago that in essence forced all banks to open up APIs outside companies to be able to access certain services. Yeah. And PSD3 is being rolled out now, which is expanding that mandate. So that's a pretty big deal. I think B2, especially for business users, that will be a big difference. Mm-hmm. So, and on the top of open banking, you also have SEPA Instant. So, kind of instant open banking initiated payments, which is, a pretty big deal as well, being able to kind of settle in seconds instead of days. And then, of course, so a lot of happening in payments, Vero, sovereign payment rails, new payment standards. The UK is rolling out commercially variable recurring payments, which is a way to handle recurring payments instantly without chargeback risk, etc., which is making quite a big splash there. And then, of course, you also have on the e-invoicing side, the e-invoicing mandates that are being rolled out, forcing a lot of companies to start sending like a richer format than PDFs or paper to government agencies and other companies. And also connected to that, you have the VIDA, which is tax reporting based on that e-invoicing that already is rolled out in, or at least a version of it in Italy. And I think it's coming to Germany and France next, probably Belgium as well. So I think it will be harmonized across the entire EU. And it's definitely a reason for companies to start looking at kind of their billing infrastructure and making sure that they have a partner that can make sure that they are compliant
and ready for the future. To be honest, Jonas, Telecom Paper, of course, a business-to-business company, and sometimes I feel sorry for our administration doing all the billing. They need to access, I think, 15 or 20 different platforms to get an invoice done or whatever. So it doesn't become any easier. for us.
No.
It becomes even more difficult. And then sending a PDF are not allowed. You need to invoice. And then, the PEPPLs and the you name it. There are shitload of those standards. So I have the feeling it's more fragmented than even before.
Yeah.
And you share.
No, it's a little bit like that. Every time they release a new standard, it's just like another standard.
Yeah.
Rather than one unified. But on the other hand, there are companies building technology that kind of aggregates that fragmented standards that there are, and I think that, you know, give it a little bit of time and technology will have caught up with that complexity, as long as you have like the right partner stack.
Yeah, so it's a bit more difficult today, but tomorrow it will be all seamless, and we don't have to spend any extra time on getting bills sent out or
maybe not
paid.
Maybe not tomorrow, but
day after.
a bit further out.
Yeah, one of the biggest and hottest topic, of course, is AI. What do you see happening in your field of expertise on AI?
So. Of course, like building companies, right? You know, AI is a game changer. You can code faster. You can, create efficiencies in almost every part of your organization. I have to say, I'm very excited about running a startup or a scale up right now, because it's a good time to build things. And otherwise, I would say that for the invoice to cash process and recurring payments, we are trying out AI or using it quite a lot actually in the dunning process, where I think there's a big upside in having smarter retries, having smarter notifications, just making sure that we can nudge people to do the right thing at the right time without having to use debt collection or other harsh measures. So it's actually something that we have used with in collaboration with a couple of telcos in Sweden with very good results, being able to optimize the collections process from an OPEX perspective, but also from a customer experience perspective, and just making sure that they get paid without needing to resort to debt collection, which in essence means that you churn that customer.
Speaking about dunning, you have the standard procedure for I sent you the bill and then remind you one week or 2 weeks later, and then another one. You mean with AI you are able to make that more fluent or even better? How does it work?
Yeah, so what you can do is first of all, you can make sure that you send the right notifications at the right time. It's not always like a strict reminder. It might be a simple push message even before an invoice is due, if you can identify that the person is more likely to pay on time if you do that. So make sure that you have money on your account or a nudge to change accounts or something like that. I think that what we're doing is adjusting the tonality of especially kind of soft reminders, the stuff that's not legally, that doesn't need to be a certain way by law. And then of course you can work with your retries. So if you have a direct debit mandate, you can try to pull. If you fail the first time, you can kind of optimize when you try to pull money the next time. And then, of course, also, the amount of time that you're prepared to give a certain customer to do the right thing, how many nudges you send, you will have people that probably, you're quite certain will pay. And it's just a matter of giving them enough space to do so. And that's a very powerful tool, I would say. Timing is almost the most impactful thing, but also, of course, if you do that just in general, you will have DSO going up, which is very bad for the cash flow of your business. So you really need to be careful about it, and I think AI is perfect for this.
You're probably also aware that bad debt, so people that at the end are not going to pay, and you get people in all kind of procedures and putting out the invoice to different companies to get paid, are very expensive for telcos or any other company. Do you say that by using your solutions or dunning process that you are able to push further back the moment when people are, the invoicing is transferred to a different company?
I would say so. Yes. So I think that you can minimize the amount of people you need to send there. And of course, that's very different from market to market.
Yeah.
In some markets, you know, you have, you know, 95% of everyone that's being sent to debt collection will pay in debt collection.
Yeah.
You know, so that's just more of like a, but will pay a lot of fees, etc. So it's more of a tax on being a bit sloppy with your payments than anything else. And in other markets, it's a lot more strict, of course. And you might have higher numbers of bad debt.
I think
it varies quite a lot across Europe.
Yeah.
But I think that in general, we can make sure that the people that were going to pay anyway actually do pay without you being sent to, you know, an expensive debt collection solution, which is also, you know, almost a recipe for churn.
Yeah. Because then bad experience, bad customer, he's going to churn away and that kind of stuff. Does your solution also allow you to cut the bill in bit smaller parts?
No, we don't do that.
No.
So it's a pure software solution. You know, we could probably do that if a client of ours would like to do that. But for the types of bills that we're working with, small consumer bills, I don't think really it makes sense to have too much.
The cost of getting it billed or for the platform is then too high for the small amount to charge.
And another good example of AI, which we are using, I think a lot of companies are doing, is on the customer support side. I think that's been one of the major applications where enterprises are usually quite far ahead, like implementing AI-based chat systems or even voice in customer support. What we have done is built out a solution that we call Agentic Assist, which can, well, both actually answer questions, etc., like works as a chatbot on the invoice, but compared to, you know, let's call it a more generalist agent, it can also actually take actions if our client allows it to. Prolonged due dates, remove reminder fees, do a lot of stuff that usually is pretty expensive to do with humans. And then also provide insights of what we think the question will be or the issue could be to other chatbots as well. So just hooking up into that ecosystem and making sure that, you know, quality increases across the stack.
I'm not sure, perhaps, you know, the percentage of calls to call centers of telcos related to billing or invoicing.
So this might be a bit Nordic, this number, but here it's around between 50 and 80%.
50 and 80. So nobody's satisfied with his billing.
I just think that, you know, it's the moment of truth for your customer experience. If there's anything that you are dissatisfied with, it will usually show when you get the bill.
Yeah.
It's when you're paying. So, you will have outages and problems like that. But in general, you know, and this is a couple of years ago, I even heard one, and this is a Swedish telco saying that, you know, around 15% of their calls were, did you receive my payment from people that had gotten a reminder, but because they used paper at that time, it took so long to receive the reminder that they actually might have paid before that. And that was a huge source of customer support errands.
Yeah.
But that might be totally different in the Netherlands. I'm not sure about that.
Well, we don't have the figures by hand, to put it that way. We do know that invoice, of course, is a big topic. Also within the provider apps, for example, there's the location where people manage their account, to put it that way. I presume your software integrates with that, the customer the service apps from the operators for the billing.
Yeah. Usually we mirror out kind of the invoice interface into the consumer app, as well as like the customer support system, etc. So that everyone involved, both the customer support agent and the consumer, will have kind of the same information and full transparency.
One last question for me, Jonas, is that in the Netherlands, there is some legislation there where people need to be informed about their contract and if it's still a good offer, to put it that way, to prevent especially older people paying a lot of money because they didn't look at what's offered in the market. I recently checked the bill of my parents, for example, and I was shocked by the amount they paid. So I did a quick search and I thought, well, they can save about 20-25 euros on a month bill and just keep the same services. So that was a big dissatisfier for me. Does your software also allow to, in the billing, say, well, we are going to bill you for this service, but be aware that there are new services online which provide you with the same service, but at a lower tier?
I think it probably, it's something that could be done, but it's totally up to our client.
Yeah.
So it would be the telco in this case that would need to take the decision to push for other types of services on the invoice or in the payment flow. I think it's totally doable, but it's a matter of, you know, what do they want to communicate to their clients?
Yeah,
I would say it's probably a very good thing. I think that it makes a lot of sense if you want to have very good, long-lasting customer relations to make sure that no one feels that, you know, new customers are getting a better service for a better price than I am. I'm being punished for my loyalty.
Yeah.
But that's totally up to our client.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a big question, of course. Loyalty and how to pay for it or to, well, that's probably the same in the Nordics. Huh? The offers you get when you start new with an operator is huge compared to the loyalty that you get paid when you are 20 years customer. So it's awkward. Okay, Jonas, last question. Where do you see Billy Graham going within the next years? And what do you think are the major events we need to keep an eye on regarding billing and recurring payments?
So I foresee Billy Graham growing mainly, actually. So right now we're investing more in DACH and Benelux than we are in the Nordics, and growing a lot quicker outside of the Nordics and in the Nordics. So we are really on our way to become a pan-European solution. And I would say that for most companies that are, you know, if you're listening to this, I would really think about payments more from a strategic perspective, because new opportunities will arise. Do you want to optimize for costs? Do you want to decrease your risk? I think that payments, with the speed of change right now, is becoming more of a strategic topic, and you can't treat it only as like a cost center. So that would be.
I hope they all listen to your advice, Jonas. And thanks for having you online. And I'm looking forward to hear about, within a year's time, what Billy Graham did. Or we follow the news quite closely. So we probably also know when you put out the press release, we know what's happening. So that's good. Jonas, perfect. Thank you. Thank you for your time. Yeah, thank you for your time and explanation. And I hope the listeners enjoyed listening to this very specific subject, but it's becoming more and more important in the customer-facing process. So I think it's important to have you online. Jonas, thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. And thanks for a great conversation.
Yeah.
Have a good day.
Yeah, thank you. En luisteraars, dankjewel voor het luisteren. Hopelijk vonden jullie het een leerzaam, interessant onderwerp. En volgens mij weet je nu waar je heen moet gaan als je iets wil doen met je billingplatform. Tot ziens en tot horens. Dag.